morning and welcome to Good to Grow. I'm Norma Martinez.
And I'm Denise Rodriguez.
Well, Denise, we're really happy to welcome back our resident bug expert here on Good to Grow. And we're really happy to welcome Salvador Bitanza. He's an extension agent with Integrated Pest Management at Texas A&M. And welcome back, Salvador, to Good to Grow.
Nice being here. Thank you.
Well, the reason you're here is because there is apparently this beetle that is causing some damage to one of the plants that we find here across the region. And I think maybe even some people might have it as a landscape plant, but mostly you see it sort of growing along the edges of the river. And we're talking about the salt cedar. But if you've been here for perhaps a while and you're a little educated about the salt cedar, you know that it's considered an invasive species and almost an unwanted invasive species, despite, you know, sometimes the pretty pink flowers it puts out in the early spring. Denise or Salvador, if you have an idea of how this species actually came into the region, why it's considered an invasive species and why, you know, we don't really particularly like it too much.
Yes, initially it was imported in the 1830s, so it's been here for a while. And here, I mean, initially was imported, introduced into California and the American Southwest. The idea was to plant it as an ornamental, but also for erosion control in the riverbanks especially. And because it was imported without the natural enemies or predators, it just spread like a wildfire, and now we are trying to control it.
So where exactly is it native to?
It is native from Central Asia, but also is found in the Mediterranean region in North Africa.
Wow, that's really interesting. How somebody got the idea to bring a plant from all the way across the continents to control erosion across the river seems rather unusual. You would think that any sort of vegetation would stop erosion.
Actually, this one does very well in the American Southwest because it puts very deep roots that access water, therefore outcompetes the rest of the vegetation. So many times in certain areas, you cannot establish anything else than salt cedar. The plant has some appeal with the flowers, like you mentioned, but also has some positive effects. Not all is negative about the plant. And positive and negative depends on our point of view. But it provides pollen for honeybees, for instance. And some people like having it as ornamental. And in that case, we are recommending applying pesticides because this beetle is highly sensitive to pesticides, so it's very easily controlled.
Well, we were talking a little bit before we talk about the beetle is how almost immortal this plant is. It'll take extreme heat. It'll survive a fire. It'll survive a flood, but it's not surviving this beetle. So tell us a little bit more about this beetle and what it's doing to the salt cedars in the region.
There are about 350 insect species that attack salt cedar. We have some other insects here. There are two scales that feed specifically on salt cedar, and there is a leafhopper. Also, they were introduced from the same region, from the native original habitat. These insects are specific to salt cedar. They may damage salt cedar, but the one that is truly effective is the salt cedar leaf beetle. But even in the best of circumstances, we don't expect that salt cedar will be completely eradicated because it hasn't been eradicated in the natural habitat. So what will happen eventually is that both the beetle and the salt cedar will occur at very low population levels, meaning you will have a few salt cedar plants here and there with a few beetles here and there. But right now you have oceans of salt cedars and billions of beetles. So it's kind of out of control, but eventually they will reach equilibrium.
So how did the beetles get here? Are the beetles themselves also an invasive species?
The other insects that I mentioned, the two scales and the leafhopper, they were accidentally introduced when the plant was brought originally. But the beetle has been studied since the late 1990s. And before it was released in originally 2003, 2006 in Texas. It was after many years of studies making sure that the beetle was only going to feed on salt cedar and nothing else. So I am willing to bet my house that The beetle will not attack pets, people, or crops, or any other plants. These relationships occur through millions of years, and some insects become generalized, and some insects become very specific. This one has become very specific. And salcedar biocontrol is ideal because salcedar plants don't have any other, let's call, sister plant species. So the beetle will be, I wouldn't say impossible, but it's highly unlikely that the beetle can affect or switch a host.
This beetle that we're seeing now, when was that released?
This beetle was released in 2010 near Presidio, and it has come west along the Rio Grande. Initially, we released another beetle, a sister species of this beetle, that was released in 2009. But that beetle was wiped out in February 2011 with a cold freeze that we had. Mm-hmm. And after that, this other subtropical tamarisk beetle took over.
So when you say we released him, who is we?
We initially actually was the USDA Agricultural Research Service, but in Texas it's been partnered with AgriLife and TDA. But AgriLife has been involved mostly in the education and reproducing the releasing the beetle later on after 2006.
So isn't that's kind of a common practice, but I know it comes with a lot of sometimes unforeseen circumstances when you have an invasive species of plant and they say, well, we're going to release a particular species of this, that, or the other to help control that. And it turns out to have, you know, perhaps a major side effect of that maybe didn't have anything to do with that particular plant, but it's affecting maybe something else in the ecosystem. Are you seeing any effect of that now?
You see, in biology, there are so many variables. People mm-hmm. say it's not rocket science. But actually, biology, I think, is far more complicated than rocket science. You have a lot more variables. So that has happened repeatedly with attempts of biological control in different parts of the world, unforeseen circumstances. But in the case of this beetle, it's been many, many decades. It has been studied and it has been found to be specific to the tamarisk genus. And aethyl plant is a desired plant that is not invasive, but it's within the same tamarisk genus. And that may be affected, although it's not preferred. So initially may be attacked and people may be concerned, but if they apply an insecticide, the plant will make it and will survive.
So what kind of damage would you notice from a plant that's been damaged by this beetle?
Initially, you can see the plants even from a distance. If they are being attacked by scales or leafhoppers, the plant look kind of sick, yellowish-brown color. But in the case of the beetle, it's usually a very deep brown or reddish color. It's very striking. And that's because of defoliation. The beetle feeds both adult and larvae. They feed on the leaves. The leaves turn brown and reddish. But also the plant has a mechanism that when it's being fed upon by the beetle, sheds the leaves also. Because after the initial defoliation, the plant will not die. The plant will wait a little time and then put out new leaves. And the cycle will be repeated. The plant stores energy reserves in the roots, and it will be depleting the energy reserves in a period of about 3 to 5 years. Eventually, it will die.
So we have this beetle here that was originally released in the region, in Presidio, in 2010. So it's been here for 4 years now. We're looking at that. And I know that we're all about, in the entire county, looking at different plants for different reasons through part of our job description. And I know that we kind of see plants around there. We kind of saw that initial decline of the first wave, or at least I did, that first wave of the salt cedar damage. And the entire, you know, banks along the river, they looked really, you know, that reddish-brown color, like they're dead. And then all of a sudden, boop, they started greening back up. So is that what you're talking about when that initial beetle attacks and then that mechanism of the plant triggers it to use that reserves in the roots to put something back out? So are you saying that the trees that we're seeing now, even in 2014, have the possibility of returning?
That's exactly right. We don't expect trees. This is the second year we have the beetle in our county. And we don't expect them, the plants to die in about 2-3 more years. So it will take a while. But the big advantage of this biocontrol program is that is the most effective in the long term and also the least expensive. The other alternatives are to apply herbicides. The plants go back and it's expensive. And also you're many times killing other desirable plants. And also mechanically, you can cut, you can uproot these plants, but they have the tendency to come back also. So with these beetles, you release 100 beetles. It takes a while, but they build numbers, and later they become billions. So it is impressive. The initial expense is not that much, but after they are being introduced, the beetle just reproduce into billions, and they take over regions. The first time we saw the beetle nearby was 2012 in Fort Hancock, Hospet County. By the end of 2012, they crossed the border into El Paso County. And last year, they went as far as 20 miles north of Las Cruces. But this year, something happened. We don't understand exactly what. But they have gone as far as Vado, which is actually south of the northernmost point that we saw last year. But on the east side of New Mexico, they have gone as far as 50 miles north of Fort Sumner.
So why can't we just let these beetles do their job and get rid of all our salt cedar? I'm sure there's people out there thinking that right now. Why would you want to control the beetle? Obviously, once the salt cedar population is gone, the beetles will be gone and this invasive species will cease to exist for the most part. Why would you want to control the beetle?
I have met a few people here in El Paso that they love that plant. We cannot tell them not to have it. We can actually advise them what insecticides are effective to keep the plant alive. And as I mentioned, the beetles are very sensitive to insecticides. The plant will be damaged, but will survive. Other people, ecologists, for instance, they are worried about the southwestern willow flycatcher, which is an endangered bird species that nests on salt cedar. But the reason it does it is because there's nothing else. When there are alternatives, it rather nests on something else than salt cedar.
Well, we want to thank you so much, Salvador Vitanza, for coming in and telling us about this really interesting beetle. And we'll have a link on our website to Integrated Pest Management in case you want to learn a little bit more about you and some of the work that you do and maybe some of the other pests that are bugging you in your home.
Yeah, and he'll be actually speaking at a lot of events around town here in the next upcoming weeks. So that'd be also a really good opportunity for people to go in and visit and be able to expand on this topic if they're very interested in salt cedar. Or they have salt cedar in their neighborhood or in their landscape.
Yeah, you'll be able to find Salvador hopefully in your neighborhood.
That's right.
Well, Salvador Vitanza is the Extension Agent with Integrated Pest Management with Texas A&M. Thanks again for being on the show.
It's been a pleasure.
Well, I'm Norma Martinez.
And I'm Denise Rodriguez.
Thanks again for listening today, and remember that a gardener's shadow is the best way to keep your garden good to grow.